The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Hey, it's Friday and you've hit the download button on Talk is Jericho. Thanks so much for doing that. Always glad to have you along with me today. I've got former WWE Divas Champion Eve coming up. She's actually got a last name now. Two of them, Eve Torres Gracie. Yes, she's one of those Gracies, the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu fighting Gracies. We're going to cover a lot of ground with her. She knows her stuff. She knows how to shoot, man. But first, you need to check out DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-day fantasy baseball site. DraftKings is having their biggest contest of the year right now. They're awarding over $3 million in cash prizes, with $1 million for first place. That's some serious cash, and DraftKings is so easy and fun to play. No long-term commitments, no being stuck with the same players, no waiting all season long to collect your winnings. DraftKings, instant cash every single day. And I'm making it even easier for you by giving you a free entry. Yeah, you heard me. You can get a free chance at winning tons of cash. Just enter Y2J at DraftKings.com for your shot at hundreds, thousands, even $1 million. So go to DraftKings.com now. Enter Y2J for your free entry. That's DraftKings.com. Use the promo Y2J. Check it out and do it right now.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world.
Marvelous.
This is Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll. The spell you're under has been cast by Chris Jericho. Yeah, you know it. The People's Podcast has arrived. The remedy for boredom is here. Let's go for a ride. All my friends have a lowrider. The lowrider is a real goer. Oh, that was a hard one, man. That's hard to keep that one going. All right. Yeah. Talk is Jericho. Jerichoholics, how in the hell are you? Listen, if you can't amuse yourself, who can you amuse, right? I'm so excited you joined me today. Got some really cool stuff. Not only are we debuting a new cowbell tune in Lowrider, we're going to play a new Fozzy Rock song for you today, one that you've never, ever heard before. Plus, we're going to talk about a whole bunch of different things that's going on this week, next week, and the crown jewel of the evening, former WWE's Divas Champion, Eve, is going to be here. She's married to Henner Gracie. She's Eve Torres Gracie now, and is now an instructor at Gracie Jiu-Jitsu Academy in Torrance, California. She actually co-developed the Gracie Women Empowered Self-Defense Program. Pretty incredible. We'll get into all that stuff with Eve, plus all of her WWE experiences, her championship runs, how she got in the business. She's still looking good, and she knows exactly what she's talking about, and she knows how to beat your ass. So I'm kind of scared of Eve. I'm excited she's on my side. We're going to talk about a couple more projects she's doing. She's going to be in the upcoming movie Scorpion King, The Lost Throne. That's coming out later this year. Plus, as if there wasn't enough already, she's also in the new TV series Matador, which premieres July 15th. Matador. That's next Tuesday, people, July 15th. Don't miss out. It's on the brand new El Rey channel. Lots to talk about with Eve. She's coming up. But first, I want to talk to you about some stuff that's going on this week. Very, very cool. Getting even closer to the release of Do You Want to Start a War? The new Fozzy record comes out on July 22nd. You can pre-order it now. And by the way, you guys have been pre-ordering the heck out of this thing. Biggest pre-orders ever for a Fozzy release. If you pre-order it, take a screenshot, post it on the Twitter at Fozzy Rock, and we will follow you. You can post it at I Am Jericho or at Talk Is Jericho, and we'll follow you. So just go for it. Go do it. Check it out. And you heard Lights Go Out in the top 40, biggest single we've ever had. You've heard One Crazed Anarchist. If you pre-order the record, you get One Crazed Anarchist to listen to now. But I'm going to play something for you that you can only hear here on Talk Is Jericho, because you're such amazing people and true, true fans, and appreciate everything you do. So I'm going to play for you now, for the first time ever on radio, on a podcast, the title track to Do You Want to Start a War. And if you saw us on the Lights Go Out tour last May, or saw us at Download, we opened the show with Do You Want to Start a War, and it's also the first track on the record. So I'm going to play it for you right now, because you deserve it. So if you like it, let me know on the Twitter. So this is it, title track, Do You Want to Start a War? Crank it up, let's go. Smoking tune, right? Let me know what you think on the Twitter at Talk Is Jericho, at I Am Jericho, at Fozzy Rock, and go pre-order. Do you want to start a war? July 22nd is the big day. July 24th will be at the Whiskey A Go-Go in Hollywood, California for the release party, release show, the first concert of the Do You Want to Start a War tour. It's called War at the Whiskey. Come check it out if you're in Southern California. You're not going to want to miss this show. It's going to be huge for Fozzy. We played the Whiskey a few years ago, had a blast. It was a packed house. Let's do it again, people! We'll see you at the Whiskey if you're in Southern California. We got Eve coming up, but earlier this week, we had Christian on the show. Great guest, a good friend of mine, and he told a hilarious story, if you haven't heard it yet, about when he got his student loan, but instead of spending it at university, he went and used that for his wrestling training. Then he had a big, long story and a long feud with the loan officer, Snooks, who told him he was no future Riso, and that he would never amount to anything and never be able to pay off his student loans. Well, Christian, of course, made lots of money, paid off the student loans, and Snooks was never heard from again until today. Because live here in the studio, tracked him down, we have loan officer Snooks. Loan officer Snooks, how you feeling today?
Well, how do you think I feel? My reputation has been slandered. My nose has been rubbed in the dirt, and I've been told by everybody that I've just done the wrong thing by the way that I treated Jay Riso. No future Riso. Me is what I still call him, and I've always called him that for the last 20 years. And because he never had what it took, and he just got lucky, and now everybody's laughing at me because I called him no future Riso, and I'm looking into an attorney to see if I can sue him for some sort of slander.
Wow, Snooks, you're going to try and sue Jay Riso / Christian for slander, but he basically told the truth from his point of view.
He, of course, he told the truth from his point of view, Mr. Jericho, but there's always two sides to every story, or three sides, in this case, yours, Jay Riso's, and the truth, which is my side.
Well, I have no dog in the hunt in this, Snooks. I'm just an innocent bystander. I mean, I did give you this this platform to air your grievances. Now, why did you feel that Mr. Riso had no future?
Well, I mean, he wanted to be in the pro wrestling business, and he should have. I mean, you can say that he was a huge success in pro wrestling, which he was, but he should have probably studied harder, and he talked about working in the sawmill. I mean, that's a reputable job. Not to be in this pro wrestling business with his gypsies, tramps, and thieves. Like me, I've had 35 years doing the same job of collecting loans, and giving loans, and watching loans mature, and taking loans away from me, from people who don't deserve them. And I just think that Mr. Riso took his gift horse loan and looked at it in the mouth and looked at me. And instead of using the loan for the purposes of academics, which is so important, Mr. Jericho, he used it for this pipe dream of me being a WWE superstar.
I mean, you sound pretty jealous there, Snooks. I mean, don't you think that Jay did a great job as a wrestler? I mean, future Hall of Famer, multi-time world champion, one of the most entertaining characters on the show, always has great matches. I mean, I think that he, you know, there's nothing wrong with working in the sawmill, but as far as he's concerned, he did a pretty dang good job, excuse my language, of being a pro wrestler. So I don't know why you just don't give him some credit.
Well, of course you're going to say that. You brought me into this studio on this show to bait me, to make me look even worse than I already am. Do you know me, how hard it is to have to walk the streets of Etobicoke, Ontario, where I have my loan office and my Subaru and my one-bedroom apartment, studio apartment, where the bathroom is in the kitchen? It's a new thing they're trying. But did you know how hard it is that I have to, walk around the streets and people are looking at me saying, oh, look, there's no future Snooks. There's no future Snooks. You sure were wrong about Jay Riso. It's ruined my life, Mr. Jericho. It's ruined my life, I say. And I will find this attorney, and I will sue Mr. Christian for slander. And on top of that, I have a challenge.
Okay, you have a challenge, and what's the challenge?
I will challenge Jay Riso, Christian, as he likes to call himself, to a match anytime, any place, anywhere. And if he wants to show up at WrestleMania 31, I will take him on, and we will have a student loan certificate on a pole match. If he can get to the top of the pole, gets to rip up his student loan for good because he didn't pay it all off, you know.
He didn't pay it all off?
No, he had 73 cents in taxes and he didn't pay. And that's how, over the years, the interest is accrued. And now he owes $173.
Okay, so you'll put the certificate on the poll and whoever gets it, if he wins, he can rip off that $173, rip up the certificate. And if you win, he has to pay it off. Is that what you're saying, Snooks?
That's exactly what I'm saying. I'm going into training and I'm going to kick his ass, me. I'm going to kick Kristen's ass, that creepy little bastard. I'm going to kick his ass because he's ruined my life and I'm going to reclaim what's mine. I'm going to reclaim my glory, Mr. Jericho. WrestleMania 31, Snooks versus Christian. You call Vince McMahon right now and you see if that match can be booked. And I need revenge. I want restitution, Jericho. I want restitution.
Wow, I mean, I don't know if you guys heard that, but Snooks just stormed out of the studio, slammed the door shut behind him on the heels of the challenge. Christian versus Snooks at WrestleMania 31. The challenge has been dropped. I mean, that's up to Christian now to decide whether or not he wants to take on his student loan officer, who apparently he still owes $173 to. You know, I don't want to get caught in the middle of this, but like I said, the forum is yours, Snooks, to come back whenever you want to, and I guess we'll find out what's going to happen. I'll put some calls into Vince McMahon, and we'll see what happens with his challenge. I know what's going to happen in a couple minutes because I got Eve Torres Gracie coming up, and she is got a lot of cool things to say. Maybe she can help train Snooks for his upcoming match if it gets granted. We got a lot to talk about. Eve is coming up very, very soon. TrueCar.com is changing car buying forever. Yes. Every day, TrueCar users receive negotiation-free, guaranteed savings. Some features not available in all states, but in the first 3 months of this year, over 126,000 cars were sold by the TrueCar certified dealer network. That's amazing. TrueCar users save an average of $3,078 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, go to TrueCar.com and find out what other people paid for the car you're looking for. Then register at TrueCar.com to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. The third step is simple. Just print out your TrueCar savings certificate and take it to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better hassle-free car buying experience. Remember, every day, TrueCar users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Save time, save money, and never, ever overpay. Visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com.
When you're talking about the biggest names in
pro wrestling,
you're talking about podcast1.com.
Uh-huh.
That's because 5 days a week, we've got Steve Austin, Chris Jericho, Jim Ross, Goldberg, and Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Woo-hoo!
All hanging out with celebs and your favorite wrestlers, past, present, and future. Names like Shawn Michaels, Zeb Coulter, Mick Foley, Lita, Eric Bischoff, William Shatner, and Tony Stewart. Some of these names may not be officially wrestlers. So get inside the Audio Squared Circle at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com. Talk is Jericho.
All right, I'm sitting across the table, and I was thinking about this. We've traveled the world together.
Yes.
I'm with Eve Torres, but I guess now Eve Torres Gracie.
That's correct.
You're Gracie. That's crazy.
I know. It is weird.
Isn't it funny?
Yes.
Like, that's always, like, the name for, you know, ass-kicking, like, the most ass-kicking family ever.
It's kind of a lot to live up to be
it
honest.
It is. You know, now you have to just put an R in front of your name, and we'll start calling you Heave.
Heave
Gracie. What is the deal with that? Why is it an R with an H sound?
You know, it was one of those things that their grandfather, Elio Gracie, it's like he's like the jiu-jitsu god. So right. Whatever he said, you know, it's like the rule for the rest of, you know, eternity. And who knows? He may have just been one day like, you know what? I really like the letter R. Mm-hmm. Now it's like everyone has to be named with R's. But no, the belief was that some letters are very strong, like mm-hmm. strong letters. So R is one. K is one. I think C is a strong letter and should be in every name. And they're very specific about how they pick their names.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they believe that you have to meet the child before you name them. Hmm. You know, you can't just come up with any name. It has to have meaning for this child, and it's going to determine the rest of their lives, you know, which, strangely enough, is really accurate because for all of the you know, Henner and his brothers and his uncles. I mean, they're pretty accurate, meaning their meanings to their name and kind of their personas and how they came out, how they turned out. So, but yes, R is in Portuguese is pronounced like an H.
Mm-hmm.
So not only are they all R names, but then it's even more confusing because they're all pronounced with H. So my new family is, let's see, it's Hiron, Henner, Halik, Halen, Horan, Henon, and Hikon. And those are just his brothers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Those are all his brothers.
Those are his brothers. It's not even his uncles and his cousins and all of those. So
where does Henner fit in the family? Like everyone knows, obviously, Hoyce Gracie.
Yes.
So is that...
Hoyce is his uncle.
Okay.
Yes.
So his dad is
Horion. And okay. Horion was the first one to move to the United States from Brazil.
Okay.
And he was the one who actually thought of the UFC. His father was.
Hmm.
And so he said, you know, they're... little history about that is that he you know he came to America and they had been doing these challenge fights for years in Brazil. That's all they did. His grandfather would just challenge these giants and everybody would come to watch. He was like one of the first huge sports icons in Brazil. And so then they came to America and they said no one believed in jiu-jitsu. No one knew what it was. Everybody was in Bruce Lee mode, mm-hmm. was in like, you know, the flashy.
So this was like in the early 70s?
This is he came in 78.
Okay.
So in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And so he just had to prove to everybody what jiu-jitsu was. So what he would do is he would just have challenge fights. He would walk into like taekwondo schools and be like, yo, let's, you know, and he would always come in respectful, but they'd be like, we don't want to teach that here. We only do this. And so he'd say, if you don't mind, you know, I'd like to see how your martial art fares against mine.
So this is Horion?
This is Horion, yes. Okay. Henner's father. Mm-hmm. And then actually all the brothers kind of followed afterwards to start help this movement. So what would happen is one by one, he would take down every, you know, karate and taekwondo.
So
he would
just walk right into their studio and say, I think I can take you?
Yeah.
It's like Karate Kid or something.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there would be these challenge. And then they would offer money to people. They would say, you know, we'll pay whoever, you know, $10,000 to somebody who can beat us in a fight.
Really?
Yeah, just to encourage more of this, like...
more awareness of what it was.
Yes. So that's what would happen. And then they, of course, this one by one, you know, just... burst everyone's bubble and just demolished everyone's thoughts about their own martial art standing games, you mm-hmm. know, because a lot of jiu-jitsu is on the ground. You close the distance, you take them down. And once you're on the ground, it doesn't matter how fancy your spinning back kick is, you can't do it. So then he thought, well, you know, we need to put this on television. The whole world needs to see martial art versus martial art and see which one is mm-hmm. most effective, you know? So then he brought his... you know, they have a large family as well, and they have this one brother, Hikson.
Right.
Who, yes, Hikson is like known as like one of the best fighters in history. You know, and
he was one of the first ones too, right?
Yes.
Hoyce and Hikson were the two.
Exactly.
Kind of start, yeah.
They're brothers, and but Hikson was very in good shape, and you know, he was like a warrior. You know, mm-hmm. he would go out there, and you're like, yeah, he looks like he can kick some ass, and he did. But Hoyce was the younger brother, so he was a little bit smaller. He didn't look like this, you know, amazing specimen, but he was very good at what he did. So they decided to put Hoyce in the UFC because then when you look at this smaller mm-hmm. smaller Brazilian guy against these giants who he had to face, you're like, oh my gosh, this poor guy, he's going to get wiped. And then all of a sudden these guys are tapping out and no one knows what's happening. You know, the small guy is beating these giants. And so that's what changed the whole world of martial arts is now saying, okay, if I'm going to learn something, I want to learn what that little guy knows, you know, because he's beating these giants with it. So it's pretty fascinating how it changed everything. But
first came onto the scene, probably in the early 90s, I was working in Japan, and obviously Japan was like super obsessed with Hoyce Gracie.
Yes,
and Hikson,
yeah, it was Hoyce, huge in Japan.
And they would wear the gis, the judo gis, and basically be kicking the crap out of everybody. And it almost was like, is this real? Like, what is this guy? Like, I don't get it. It was a whole new style of fighting that was basically created by the Gracies.
Yes. And if you watch the, if you watch those first UFCs, the funny thing is the commentators don't even know what's going on. And they're like, wow, Hoyce Gracie looks like he's in a lot of trouble. He's on the bottom of the fight. And then all of a sudden the guy is on top of the fight, is tapping out.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, they don't even know what's going on there. And they're like commentating and they're like, well, that was interesting. So, but it's just completely changed it. And the basic idea is that, you know, you don't have to win a fight standing up. Just because you get knocked down to the ground doesn't mean that you've lost.
Right.
You can keep going to the ground until somebody, and actually it's easier to control people from the ground.
Because that's when you can lock him in and get the key locks,
yes.
and wrap your legs around them.
Yeah, once you have them in your guard, you know, you have control over them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really what changed everything. And that's what I love about it, too. It's like, you know, for being a woman, like this is, you know, jiu-jitsu has been great for mixed martial arts and for martial arts everywhere, but I feel like it hasn't even served its most important purpose, in my opinion, which is for women and even children to learn this. Like, now people think about jiu-jitsu, they think about MMA. That's the first thing they think of is UFC. Mm-hmm. But really, it's such a good self-defense system. Mm. That's where it started. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where it came from. And so that's what I do now, is I teach women, and we don't call it jiu-jitsu because it's a little intimidating. So we have like our Women Empowered program, and it's just self-defense, but it's all based in principles of jiu-jitsu.
Gracie Woman Empowered Self-Defense Program. So this is kind of like, I remember like in the 80s, everybody was into Taekwondo, like you said, but now it's kind of moved into the jiu-jitsu. So you have a school that you teach women, or what exactly is it that you do?
So we actually, it's still at the Gracie Academy. So the Gracie Academy is in, we have one in Torrance. We actually have one in Beverly Hills right down the street.
Oh, really?
Yes.
They're all over the world now, though.
Yes, they are. They are. Yeah. We have certified training centers, and a lot of people use the name Gracie, but there may not be a Gracie instructor teaching there, because Gracie Jiu-Jitsu is a martial art. So you can say we teach Gracie Jiu-Jitsu here.
It's a brand name.
Yes. Yes. It's the name of the art. So, but we teach at the Gracie Academy in Torrance and in Beverly Hills, and so we for the first time in many years, we now offer women's only classes, you know, on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. But for a while, I just felt like, oh, there's not enough interest from women. But I really feel like, number one, you have to have a woman help teach that, you know, because it's like you walk in, and especially jiu-jitsu is a very intimidating thing when you don't know what's going on.
Like, is it just the name of it?
Just the name. And then you walk in, and imagine you just see all these people in gis, in white gis, you know, these guys just rolling with each other. Like, you're like, okay, everyone's just, you know, are they hugging, or what's going on right now?
Yeah.
They're just smashing on top of each other. It doesn't look appealing to somebody who just comes in. So, but then once you realize the art of it, I mean, you can watch it for hours, and it's like a chess game that you're watching, and, you know, move after move. So to the untrained eye, it's not appealing at all, especially for women who are like, I don't want to do that. I just want to learn how to defend myself. So
it's like if a woman goes into a gym and there's a bunch of muscle heads working in there, it's kind of like, I don't know if I want to be a part of this.
Yes, right. But I want fitness, and I want something for myself. I just want it to be more my style. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we created a women's only program where you don't have to wear a gi. You just come in, you can be comfortable, and you're only working with other women. And we only focus on attacks that would happen to women. So the most common threats that women face. You know, you don't come in and learn like the spider guard first thing, you know what I mean?
Right.
You have to start with the basics.
If you're walking down the street and someone tries to steal your purse,
or grab your wrist or grabs your hips, or, you know, and we do it from all the way from just like a wrist grab all the way to a kill or be killed scenario where you have to, if you had to, you could end someone's life if, you know, kill or be killed, like I
said. Wow.
So it's a great program.
Is this a program that you created?
The Gracies created this, you know, so it's all based in Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. And they've been teaching a version of this for about 15, almost 20 years. But back then it was called Rape Safe. And then they changed it to Women Empowered because obviously the term rape is a very charged word. So they obviously changed it when they kind of learned more about what's politically correct here in America. And then actually Henner was a huge part in really developing this program. And I would like to say that, you know, I'd like to think I had some some input there
too. Well, sure.
Yeah. So, you know, he came to me for a lot of insight on how to put this program together and how to market it and what things we needed to touch on besides just the techniques, you know, the psychological aspects of a sexual assault and how to come out and how to survive that. So it's been great. But what's been awesome is that these women start just saying, you know, I just want to learn how to defend myself and I want to do, you know, maybe get in shape. And, but then next thing you know, they finish the program and now they're like, okay, now what? And then they want to continue to train jiu-jitsu. Mm. So what ends up happening is you get more women training jiu-jitsu who maybe at first said, oh, that's not for me. But because we introduce them in a way that's like just women, you know, just like women with women, feeling very comfortable, feeling very safe. But then it becomes like a science to them and an art that they want to continue learning, you know. So then that's when there's a lot more women at our school now that are just – continuing on to get their blue belts and their, you know, and
now beyond. Do you train this program or run the program?
Yes.
Or one of the teachers?
Yeah, so
instructors?
I teach. No, yeah, I'm Henner and I are the head instructors.
Okay.
Program. Yep.
So let me ask you a question.
Yes.
So you said something that I have to ask. So let's say you're walking down the street and someone attacks you and they've got a knife or something.
Yes.
Kill or be killed. What do you do?
Yeah. So, well, knives are a different situation. We always say if someone has a knife or a weapon, I say run. I say give them whatever you want.
Oh.
If they want your purse, you give it to them. If you want money, at that point, it's not worth you trying to be a hero and trying to fight for it, you know?
You're talking if someone's like choking you or
yes,
something.
Yes, I'm talking about maybe they've already isolated. Because usually, you know, especially for women, men I feel like face a little bit different situations. For women, you know, our worst case scenario is we're isolated somewhere. We have been taken from a, mm-hmm, a location. Mm-hmm. We're isolated somewhere. We don't even know where we're at. We're with an attacker or a sexual predator. And, you know, there's no escape, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the worst case scenario for a woman. And so if it's just you and somebody and your attacker, what do you do to defeat them?
Right.
And the idea in jiu-jitsu is that you don't defeat them. You allow them to defeat themselves, right? So
wait, meaning, for them to make the first move.
You have to allow them to make the first move. Then, you know, the guard position, which you're familiar with, is one that's really important because that's where you can. That's almost like your safety zone, and which is fascinating because in a sexual assault situation, where does a man want to end up? Inside a woman's legs, which is the guard. But from the guard, you can control them. You can control punches. You can submit them with an arm lock or a choke or a kimura.
So you're talking about if you're on your back in like a typical like missionary sexual position,
yes,
that's where the guy is going to be trying to rape you. But
yes,
that's where you have the most power.
That's where you have the most power.
Wow.
From the ground.
Good point.
Yeah. So once you know that, you know, what now all of a sudden the worst case scenario that you could have ever imagined in your life becomes like, oh, not only can I survive from this, but if I had to, I could actually defeat somebody from this position. Like, it's just fascinating.
So how could you do that?
So, I mean, we could demonstrate right now, but, you know, no one would be able to see it. But, like, I mean, there's all types of submissions. So, basically, from there, from the guard, you know, all you need is, like, a head and an arm, and you can triangle choke somebody from inside the guard. And especially for someone who their goal, again, is a sexual assault, there's also ways that you use psychology to make those situations happen.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning if you just fight, you know, crazily the whole time you're on the bottom, what's going to happen? They're going to just fight to hold you down and to control you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to exhaust your energy.
Right.
Right? And then you'll have nothing left. So you almost have to know the point at which you can fight and the points at which you can't. Meaning the points at which you need to stay calm and not panic and breathe and think about what your next plan of action is, instead of you're at the bottom of the fight and now you're just fighting crazily and doing whatever you can and kicking and screaming and punching what ineffectively to get out, and then it doesn't work.
Right.
Right. So you almost need to know, okay, he's not hurting me right now. He's just holding me down. I need to, you know, relax, breathe, and wait for the opportunity for, okay, there's an opportunity for a choke or for an arm lock or for submission.
You're almost rope-a-doping him in boxing terms.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there, we even teach a verbal, like, surrender, where if someone's just grabbing you and controlling, and you even say, look, please don't hurt me. I'll do whatever you want. You know what
playing
I mean?
Like, possum almost, yeah.
You do. You have to, because that's a crime of power.
Uh-huh.
And so once they feel like, all right, we have the power that, you know, they've clearly surrendered. And at some point that does happen, whether it's a false surrender or whether it's real. This happens. You know, we didn't make this stuff up. This is all based on women who are survivors, who have told us scenarios and from police reports and from all of that, we know how these things go down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we use to help create this program. It's
okay.
Not just stuff that we're like, yeah, this might work.
Right.
You know, based on past scenarios.
Scientific.
It totally is.
Information, yeah.
Yeah, and it's effective. It's very effective.
Wow, that makes a lot of sense. Like,
yeah.
Wow. And were you a fan of MMA before you met Henner and got into the Gracie family?
You know what? Not really. I mean, I was. What's interesting? My brother trained jiu-jitsu in high school, so I knew about jiu-jitsu, and it was a part of my life because it was part of my brother's life.
Mm-hmm.
But that was pretty much it. I actually went to a UFC like probably 3 years before I even met, you know, family.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it was like Anderson Silva was there. That meant nothing to me. And I was just like, oh, this is cool.
Yeah.
But now I would have, like, had, looking back, had I have been that fight, I think Anderson finished with a triangle choke, I would have been like, oh, you know, I would have been like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's pretty interesting. Like, I was intrigued by it, but I didn't, you know, I wasn't per se a fan. And once you start to learn and study, it means so much more to you, mm-hmm. You know, to watch it.
Well, you've always been very athletic too, though. I mean, obviously 3-time WWE Diva champion, mm-hmm. but before that also like a cheerleader for the Clippers.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, dance
on the dance
Clippers,
team on that.
I was a gymnast growing up. And
So you always had that kind of that athletic, were you a wrestling fan growing up?
I was in the like pop culture
casual,
sense, very casual. Yeah. Like Rock, Stone Cold, and mm-hmm. you know, of course, Chris Jericho. No.
Thank you.
Does that always make you like, yeah, I used to watch you when I was growing up.
I know.
Like,
I used to watch you when I was a kid. How old are you?
Yeah.
I'm like 22. You're still a kid.
Dude, even I get that now. And I'm like, wait, what is happening?
You're the elder statesman
yeah,
of the Diva
like,
division
oh
now.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Never say that again.
Tell us quickly about talking about being an NBA cheerleader. I know nothing about that. Do you try out? Is it something? Yeah. Would you travel with the team?
No, you don't travel. It's actually it was super fun. Like, but I only did it for 1 year because I was like, all right, I did that.
Because you don't really get paid, right?
Yeah, you get paid like literally enough to pay for your gas money there, and maybe like the eyelashes that you have to buy to put on for the game.
You get a free tracksuit.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it was so fun. Like, actually, I had never been to a professional basketball game in my life until I danced for the Clippers. So
wow.
my first game, I'm like on the floor. I'm like, this is pretty cool. But then it kind of ruined basketball for me because now I go to a basketball game. I'm like, these seats suck. Like,
you used to be right on the court.
Yeah, I'm like, this sucks. I can't see anything. Like, I need to be back
just
down there.
Now, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, this is. Mm-hmm.
Is that what led you to getting into the WWE?
It was. You know, after I graduated college, I just.
You graduated college with like I have two notes written down, and one
yes.
of them was full scholarship with degree in industrial and systems engineering. I don't even think I can spell that. What is that?
That is correct. So yeah, I got a full tuition scholarship to USC. That's how I ended up in California.
Okay.
And then I was always like a very math science oriented person.
Man.
But I still had like an artistic side to me, and that's where I love dance and performance. Mm-hmm. You know, so. I went to school and I'm like, you know what? I just want a degree where I don't have to keep going to school to get a job. Like, that was like my idea.
Yeah.
And I actually enjoyed it. So I went to school for industrial and systems engineering, and there are actual industrial engineers out there. But I graduated and I was like, you know what? I did what I always said I would do. And I got my degree, and I know this will never go away. You
right.
know,
yeah,
my
exactly.
degree is here, and I always have that to fall back on. That was really important to me because that allowed me, I feel like, to pursue entertainment and to mm-hmm. pursue my dreams fearlessly because it's like
you had a backup plan.
Yeah, it's like you have a backup plan. Yeah. Like no matter what happens, I can fall on my face and guess what? I've got this degree that I can go back to. So that was really empowering for me to be able to just go out there and do what I wanted to do.
We're talking to Eve Torres Gracie, former WWE Divas champion. And coming up, we'll hear about the Divas search that got her into the WWE and what her time in the WWE was like. We'll also find out about her new TV series, Matador, premiering on the El Rey channel on July 15th. So much more with Eve on the way.
All right, here's why you need to download the Steve Austin Show right now. I got Vince Russo, former head writer for WWF during the Attitude Era. He was in the middle of Austin 316, the Montreal Screwjob, and the Monday Night Wars.
I can't remember things that Vince shot down. There were no chains. It was Spaulding's to the wall.
Download the Steve Austin Show now at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to GEICO, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
GEICO, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Talk is Jericho.
Hey, we're here with Eve Torres Gracie, former WWE Divas Champion,
Tell us about the Diva Search, Eve. I mean, at this point, was it on? Was it an internet thing?
This is like when they first kind of made it an internet thing. Only the last three, when it got down to the last three, then we went to Raw and SmackDown.
Okay, so you show up for the Diva Search, and how many other girls is there?
Well, first I submitted a video. So I went in, and they interviewed me on video, and so I do my little interview, and I'm like, okay, let's see where this goes, you know? And then I get a call back a couple months later, like, oh, we want to bring you in for the casting, which is like 50 plus, you know? They narrowed it down from thousands of girls to like 50. And I'm like, okay, so it. So I went, and yeah, it's 50 women who all walk in there, and I'm like looking around, like, oh my gosh, I'm totally like not like just. I just remember the image in my head, and it's all like these girls were just, you know, bombshells, and like, and then like some of them had like tattoos, and were looked. They looked like
how wrestler.
Like somebody might think would a female wrestler would look like, right. And but what was interesting was that I feel like that year they were looking for something different, and I could tell by when it came down to me in the top eight, we were all very much like athletic, but kind of a little more girl next door, not like bombshell, like you know, Playboy magazine, you know, material. So. Not that I'm saying I'm
not. I think you're underestimating yourself. But you're saying for the certain, maybe like the blonde Barbie doll thing or something. Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah, so and then it came down to the, you know, the votes, fan votes.
Who else was in, anybody else in that did anything at all?
Yeah, I'm like, let me think. So actually, yeah, Taryn Terrell.
Oh, okay.
Taryn Terrell was in my Diva Search. And then the other girl that I was like, me and the other girl, her name is Brooke.
Was it the whole thing where you lived in a house? Or
No, we didn't do that. We just had like one. We had, when it came down to the eight, we did like a few days where we all lived together, or not lived together, we stayed in a hotel, and then we did these like, you know, obstacle courses. Yeah, it was all on the beach in Huntington Beach. We did like obstacle courses and interviews and silly like games and things like that. And it was more just to see your personality. Mm-hmm. There was no rhyme or reason to it.
They probably knew from the moment you walked in the door if you had any aptitude at all, you're going to get signed, right?
And, yeah. And now I know how WWE works. I'm like, they knew the whole time what was going on.
Fix was in.
Yeah, yeah, right. So it worked out. And then I ended up winning that. And that was on SmackDown that they announced that I was I had won the Diva Search.
And what did you win like $250,000? That was the thing.
No,
right?
That was the year before.
Oh, okay.
And that was the worst part because everyone's looking at me like, I just missed it, and so. But then everyone still hated me because they thought I just won $250,000.
Oh,
like,
that's
here's this Diva Search winner making more money than I am. Like, no. I'm like, no, I didn't get that.
So what did you win? A contract?
It was $100,000.
Oh, okay.
And then, but you know how that works.
Split like, over 4 years.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. $100,000. And half of that was a contract, and it's and then the rest of it's taxes, and you're like.
Now, of course, we know how wrestling can be, especially I know sometimes in the Divas locker room. How was it when you walked in there as, you're the Diva Search winner?
I'm the new Diva Search winner, guys.
Yeah.
I didn't walk in there like that, but
But did you get some flack? Right?
Yes, it was like. I mean,
the girls in the WWE are worse than the guys, man.
100%.
It's 100%. Crazy.
I think it's a little different now. It's different all around now.
It all
way
is,
different.
Yeah.
But yeah, back then it was, and it wasn't even that bad for me.
Uh-huh.
But it was, I definitely got it. And I get it. Like, I get it's like, yeah, you know, this is something people have been working their lives for. And you just waltz in here and I'm like, hey guys, I'm the new diva. And, so I get the but you got to give people a chance.
Yeah,
you got to give people a chance, and it's not my fault. You know, I came in and I was down to work as hard as anybody else. And I think that's just what I told myself. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to kind of stay to myself. I'm just going to mind my business and work hard.
Did anybody warn you that you were going to?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I had a lot of warnings, which was good because you didn't need that. Like if I had gone in there thinking like, oh my gosh, I just made a bunch of new friends, I would have been like,
who warned you though? Because you just came in on your own.
What? Actually, Lena Yada was one of the girls in the Diva Search with me, and she was friends with Candice Michelle.
Oh, okay.
So she like gave me the whole rundown on like what's going to go down. And
what's going to go down in the high school world of the WWE? You almost need a handbook. Like, here's what you're supposed
totally
to do. Shake everyone's hand. Be nice. I used to hate that when someone new would come in and they were obviously told shake everyone's hand whenever you see them. But it'd be like, dude, you don't have to shake my hand. Like, I've shook your hand like twice, three times a day. Just stop, man. Please don't.
That's what I remember. Was my first day. It was at Nassau Coliseum, and I just remember it so vividly. My first day when I was in the Diva Search. Actually, everyone was nice to me. People were fine. The day I won, after I won, and I remember I'm walking around and people told me the same thing. Make sure you shake everyone's hand. So I'm going up to everybody. My face is like hurting because I just have a nonstop smile.
Hi, I'm Eve.
Yes. And so I'm doing my best. Like I'm really trying. And of course you can't remember everyone's names. You don't know who you said hi to, who you don't. Like
there's people that worked there for 14 years that I still don't know their names.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, all the crew. It's like, it's hard to know. So
and you get to a certain point where you can't even ask. I mean, I've known you for 5 years. I can't even ask anymore. I'm trying to look at his pass. Like, hey dude, what's up? I have no idea what his name is.
It's so bad. So then, but I remember Michael Hayes coming up to me and I think it was something like I was sitting down and Mark Henry didn't have a seat or something like that. And Michael Hayes came in and he's like, come here, I need to talk to you. And I'm like, okay, hi.
Hi, I'm Eve. Hi.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, I know. He's like, I don't even remember what he said, but basically he's like, you're not in Diva Search anymore. You work for us now. And he's like, I heard that you're just walking around here like thinking you're all that. That's not going to get down over here. That's not going to work. I need you to be nice to everybody. I need you to shake everybody's hand, show some respect. And I'm like, okay, I'm really sorry about that. I'll just try to be nice to people. But I was like, thanks for telling me. And, you know, I could have sat there and been like, I would, you know. Yeah. And I was like, I'm not even going
to. You figured out pretty quick the hierarchy, what has to be done,
You just got to do it. And you just, you know, and you just prove. It's the only way you can do it is just, mm-hmm. you just work hard and.
It's almost the initiation process of when you come in, how are they going to react and what are you going to do? And how was it for you learning how to bump and all that sort of stuff, learning how to wrestle?
You know, it was challenging. But I, you know, I was a gymnast growing up and I had done, you know, as an athlete, you learn how to put your body through a lot. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, but I definitely remember the first days like down at FCW and training, just like feeling like I was going to throw up for a week straight after you first learned, like first take.
So they sent you down to Tampa for a while?
They kind of did, but what ended up happening is I was in LA. So because I won the Diva Search, I didn't have to go down to FCW.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was like the deal. You didn't have to move down there.
Oh, gotcha.
You know, it was like, if you won the Diva Search, you could stay where you were and just, but I was like, I need to train. I want to learn. Like I was like, I didn't come here to be a backstage interviewer,
right.
So what I did is I ended up finding somebody in LA. I started training with Jesse Hernandez.
No kidding.
In San Bernardino.
I worked with Jesse years and years ago. Yeah.
But then what happened was WWE found out about it and they got really mad because, you know, if anything were to happen, if I was training with Jesse Hernandez and I freaking break my neck, you know, that's not covered under anything and I'm screwed. And
how did they find out?
There was another girl, I won't mention any names, but she was training with me and she stooged off.
No kidding.
Because she wanted to like brag to people that she was training. She's like, yeah, I train with Jesse now. And I'm like, oh, I know, like just to show that she was like taking bumps, you know, learning and training. I'm like, dude, we can't. So whatever. So then I would go down to FCW on my time off, but it was really cool to be able to train on the road because – I mean, you think about it. I mean, FCW is great, especially now that they have NXT. Have you been down there?
Yes, the performance center. Crazy, right?
It's crazy.
I mean, it's so advanced and so high tech, and it's completely opposite from the way I trained.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, I wish I had that.
I know. You do, but you almost like, then you go on the road and you're like, wait, where's my nice gym that I get to go to every day?
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
So you were training on the road like before the shows?
Yeah, before the shows. And what I realized is like, I don't know, for me, I feel really lucky that I got to learn that way because I've got people like Arn Anderson correcting, you know, telling me in Fit Finley, teaching me my basics and working with me. And like, and I remember my first match on the road was with Natty.
At a
live event. It was my first singles match. And I had Arn Anderson and Edge giving us feedback on our match, after our match. And I'm like, where else do you get
that? That's right. It's invaluable.
For my first match ever, and that's who I get feedback from. So from the very beginning, it's like I'm not getting some, oh, yeah, well, your drop kick should be higher. Or, you know what I mean? Like it was very much psychology, and it was very much – and every day we would make changes. And by the end of the weekend, I was like, I already feel like I learned so much in just 3 days with, you know, working with a great veteran, Natty, and then also having invaluable feedback from – Arn and you know, it's like, it's just amazing.
And you mentioned Fit, who works mostly with the Divas. How important was Fit to your career and your matches and basically all of the women's division? He's the guy that's assigned every time.
Fit is the Divas division. I mean, he really is.
Great quote.
He is the heart of all, you know, he was the one who would... It's like he just believed in us even when we didn't believe in ourselves. That's what I always felt like about Fit. Like, you know, I'd be like, oh, I don't know. And he's like, nope, you can do it. And he would put together these, you know, these great matches that we had a lot of fun with. And he just knew, he was very good at calibrating what we could and couldn't do and what we were capable of and what we weren't, you know?
Like exemplifying the strengths and hiding your weaknesses,
yes,
kind of?
Yeah, exactly. And I remember when Fit was gone for a few years and we were just lost.
No one really replaced him.
No one replaced
him. He had a way of talking to the girls, to you guys.
Yeah, he just got us. Like, he knew when we were kind of, you know, girls get emotional, they get upset, they get, you know, and it's like, you just need to know, and not that he ever, because he would be hard on us too, and he would just say, he'd like, be like, that sucked. So he would be honest with us if something wasn't good, but he still knew how to, he just knew how to deal with us, you know?
You know, it's so funny because, you know, I'm sure you know this, but Fit Finlay, like in the early 90s, was one of the most amazing heels and just a killer. Like,
yeah,
he would beat the crap out of guys. Yes. One of the most critically acclaimed guys.
So, what a rib that he ends up with.
Well, I almost wonder if it was a rib at first, but
I think
then,
it was.
As any good worker will do, okay, I'm going to take what I'm given. I'm going to make it great.
That's exactly,
and that's exactly what he did. I bet you, I would say almost probably 10 out of 10 girls, not even 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10 girls would say what you just said about Fit Finlay in the women's division.
100%.
You know, made you a better worker just from working with him.
Yeah. And so it's like, all right, you're going to give me the women's division? Well, I'll make the women's division better than some of your men
nationally. That's how it was, too.
Would happen in some parts of, you know, some points in history. It's like, so, I mean, he was just, and I remember when he came back, I walked in and he was there and I just started crying. Like, it was like my dad had come back after, you know, war,
right, being
or something.
In war, yeah.
I was like, oh, where have you been?
Fit was let go for a few years for basically political red tape.
Yeah,
and like you said, when he came back, everyone was so excited and so happy.
Oh, God. He just.
Who were some of your favorite opponents to work with? Because around that time was kind of, in my opinion, if you're dealing, when did you start? 2007?
2007, so 2008, yeah.
7, 8, 9, 10 was a real kind of golden age with the divas in work rate and also, to my opinion, looks. Like, it was the hottest period
for
the divas, and the matches you guys were having were really good as well.
Yeah, I feel like I had the opportunity to work some really great opponents. I mean, in the beginning, like, I wish I would have been able to work more with like Mickey when she was there, and Melina, but they kind of, by the time I started getting my stride, they were already gone from the WWE. So, but my, you know, the opponent I learned from the most was Beth.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I mean, I worked for Beth for probably a year and a half straight. And I learned more working with her than anything. I mean, she was so helpful. And Beth is such a giving, you know what I mean? Just a giving worker. And she just believes in what she's doing. She really wants to create something magical and something great. And my best moments were with Beth. You know, I remember Madison Square Garden, actually twice, having matches with her, and just, we both came back and we were just in tears, just crying and hugging each other, like, because it was just like magical.
And plus it's Madison Square Garden.
And plus it's MSG, yeah, like, to have that.
Like, even if you don't know, you know the name, but when you get in that place, I was talking with my dad about this a few weeks ago. I mean, it's the most famous arena in the world, and there's something about that place where you want to have a great performance.
Yeah,
not that you don't every night, but there especially.
Well, and I remember that one meant so much to me, because I remember actually, like, a couple years prior, I had a match at MSG that was just like garbage. You know what I mean? It was like, I think it was like a six diva something schmoz, and it was like, it was just I left feeling really just like defeated. And like, here I am at this, you know, one of the top venues in the world for performance and I just felt like we didn't get it. You know what I mean? Like, and I didn't get it. And it was really frustrating for me. And so to kind of come full circle. And then, so I had all these bad memories at MSG for a while. And then to finally turn that around and have my two favorite matches be at MSG were like, it was just amazing. So now I have like a Ranger shirt that I got from that being there at the at MSG, and I, like, every time I wear it, I'm like, oh.
So who did you win your first title?
It was with Maurice, actually.
Okay. So when you came into the company, it was as a wrestler. It wasn't as a backstage interviewer.
I actually started as a backstage interviewer. I did backstage interviewing for a year while I was kind of training.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So while I was training and learning, was, you know, still a backstage interviewer because they wanted my face on television.
And it'd give you experience.
Yeah. And it was great. It actually was perfect because I got to kind of learn the ropes and figure things out, you know, before just being thrown out there, which is what happens with so many girls. Now they have NXT, so that helps a lot because they get exposure to be on television and have matches in front of audiences without it being like in front of millions of people.
You could always talk too, which a lot of times in the Divas division, girls didn't really get a chance to talk a lot.
Yeah.
So just by doing the backstage interviewing too, that you were able to kind of work
Got
on that and get it comfortable. Yeah. So did you enjoy heel, babyface, both?
Oh, I love being a heel was way better. Especially as a woman.
Yeah.
And, you know, unfortunately, just the female baby faces get nothing in WWE. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, you know, there's yet to be, in a long time, there has not been like a really strong female, you know, baby face. And, but the heels, there's been some great runs for some heels. You know, when AJ was a heel, when I was a heel, like it was.
And when you were a heel, was this, because I remember at one point you were kind of like the general manager or assistant.
Because
I remember we did a couple bits where you were like, knew all the rules of the contracts and all this stuff. Like you're really good at Johnny's little assistant, right?
Yes.
Yeah, because then that was as a heel, obviously.
Yeah, and that was just so much fun, and I really that's when I felt like I started just really becoming comfortable and enjoying it. You know, for so long you're so worried about doing things right, and am I stepping on people's toes, or am I like, you know, and second guessing yourself and everything. And
yeah.
I feel like it's good to everyone should be a heel at some point, because it's like almost all the rules go
There's
out
no
the
rules,
door.
Right.
Yeah, all the rules go out the door, so you're just allowed to be like kind of free and just.
Yes.
You know, express yourself and have fun with it. And then you can almost learn what you learn from there to go back to being a face, I feel like, and making a good face, because you know what you wanted as a heel to work with.
I find, when you are a heel, it's always easier to turn. It's easier to make people hate you than it is to make them like you.
But I'm really good at making people hate me, apparently. That's what I learned when I was there.
But once – yeah, right. I'm not talking about behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes.
But once people hate you, it's hard to make them stay hating you.
It's true.
And that's when you start turning
babies. Because everyone's a little bit of a – like there's a little bit of a badass.
You have more personality.
Yeah.
It's like all the best bad guys in history end up being good guys. Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Dr. Silence Lambs, Dr. Hannibal Lecter.
Yes, right.
Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
You know, all these guys become more entertaining than the people that they're killing. Mm-hmm. And that's why you start looking heels better, you know. But, you know, we talked earlier when you first came in. It's amazing how the conversation goes. But I said we've toured the world together. I remember a couple specific things, because that's one thing about WWE. We do tour worldwide.
Yeah.
And when I say worldwide, I'm talking about the ones I remember was we were in Iraq together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember, we had our little gang.
Yeah, a little beard.
Team Cock and Balls,
Team Cock and Balls, yes. We had our little mascot.
Yeah, we found this little mascot on the back of the bus, and it was a giant penis with balls that were his legs.
Yeah, and like a little face.
Little face on it, yeah. Team Cock and Balls. I remember that, because I always talk about MVP about that, and you were in it too.
Yeah.
And how did you enjoy touring Iraq?
Gosh, those were some of the most memorable times I had in WWE. I mean, aside from the matches, like – those were experiences that I wouldn't trade for anything in the world. And it teaches you so much about life, you know, and for those who don't have somebody in their family in the military or don't have experience in the military firsthand, to go out there and really see what's going on and also just feel the appreciation that you get from just being out there and, you know, visiting them is like, it really changes your perspective on what's going on in the world and what kind of sacrifices people are making. And after that, it was like, all right, now I feel like I have a lifelong, you know, commitment to our military, and which I still carry out, you know, by teaching. We teach Gracie survival tactics to military and law enforcement.
Okay.
And I got to do that Stars and Stripes reality show, which was you know, for the military as well.
It was like actually being in the Army, right?
Somewhat. Yeah. I'm like,
quote-unquote.
Yeah, exactly. So
I was always amazed, like, at first, when we first started going over there years ago, I was a little bit like trepidatious about it, because I was like, in my mind, I'm going to a war zone and there's going to be like, you know, shooting. And then the first time that I actually went over there, like, I couldn't believe how, like you said, how amazing it was and how appreciative everyone was. Like, oh, thank you so much for coming over here for, you know, 3 days. I mean, well, these guys are over for 18 months, haven't seen their children that were born, and then they went away for like a year and a half. I couldn't believe how long their tours were.
Yeah, I know. You know? It's just
and just how excited they were to see us, how much it meant to them.
Yeah.
And
that's what you get, is that you get the sense that it's almost like they've been forgotten. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that they're out there and no one knows that they're there. They're not getting the glory. You know, like, they're not getting these medals of honor. They don't have a book out about what their experiences were. And they just go, they come back, and most people have no idea what they went through.
Yeah.
Ever. And so it's easy to feel, I'm sure, like, okay, I'm out here doing my thing, but no one really cares. No one really,
really know.
No, you know, and everyone wants to feel, not that you do everything in life to get noticed for it, to get, you know, to get thanked or patted on the back, but you, you know, it's nice to feel that like, oh, here, I put in all this hard work and somewhere I'm going to get this back.
Yeah. And they're,
you know,
getting some sort of recognition and some sort of appreciation. And we gave them that,
yeah,
you know, to go over there.
Yeah.
And also too, like when we toured Iraq, meaning the WWE, it's not like a typical USO where you go to the main base and you hang out, and you know, we would go everywhere,
the, yes,
to the outposts and like middle of
all
nowhere,
the fobs and like, yeah, middle of just dust and
yeah,
dirt. It would smell like
it was awful. And I remember, yeah, you'd go to the outpost. It was called Outside the Wire, where it's not a, it's an unsecured war zones, etc. But the guys would always be so happy, like, okay, there's some wrestlers, fine, but the diva, like, you, I'm sure when you showed up, there's, oh my gosh, it's a pretty girl. Hello, how are yeah, you? You know what I mean? Like, you get that real, you feel like Marilyn Monroe or something.
I
like
know,
that, you know?
It was great, you know, and it's good to even know, like, wrestling fans or not, like, they all just were so appreciative.
Just excited to
yeah,
see you, right?
Yeah, and to see Americans that, like,
yeah, 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 that cared.
Yeah.
Did you not, did you go over there one time, like, we did tours, I think I did three, where we would do a show, and
yes,
then they stopped doing that.
Yeah.
You just went over just with Vince, right?
Yeah, so I went over twice, actually. I went once with Vince, and
Vince always goes.
Vince always
every
goes.
Every year.
Every year, and I commend him for that, because it's a lot of, it takes so much energy out of, especially Vince, like, takes energy out of all of us,
yeah,
but it's amazing how exhausting that can be to be on the entire time, because you don't, you know, there's not one person that you want to just be like, oh, hey,
no,
you know, like
every person that's
you
right,
meet, you want to give everything you have inside of you to them,
yeah,
you know, smiling and engaging and talking. And but it's, I mean, it can be exhausting, but at the end of the day, you're like, oh my gosh,
because we would land yeah, after like a 15-hour flight through Rammstein in Germany, and the
yeah,
big, I don't even know what it's called, aircraft carrier
yep,
thing. It was cold. And we would land, and you'd have like an hour to stitch, dash your bags,
yes,
you'd throw your bags away, and then you'd go out and start meeting and greeting for like
yeah,
3 days straight.
Yeah.
And like you said, you're always on.
Yep.
So
yep,
so you went with Vince. I mean,
I
how,
went with Vince.
How was
I
that?
Went with Barbie, actually.
Uh-huh.
I remember the two of us went, and it was great. You know, it's the same thing. It was a lot of touring. It was just nonstop touring. Big Show was there too, which, you know, actually Big Show was great. He,
yeah,
he was just messing with us the whole time.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
Just causing trouble.
That's him.
Of course. And, but, you know, and again, that was the first time I really got to see kind of Vince one-on-one too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you always see him in Gorilla, you see him in passing, you get to shake his hand, talk to him. But for most of us, we never really get to time to see who
that
Vince
real
is.
Real one-on-one, yeah.
Yeah. And it was, that was really cool just to see and see how he is with everyone and how appreciative he is.
How did you like Vince as far as a relationship wise, personal?
I always love Vince. And I think, you know, Vince always appreciated me, which I feel like he always respected me,
mm-hmm,
which was really great, you know. And,
sure,
and obviously I've seen the other side of Vince with other people, which I never wanted to go there. So I was like, I'm glad I never had experienced that side of him.
Yeah.
But I always had I always felt great. And he always was very, even to the day that I had to, you know, ask for my release and had my last match, he was so, you know, respectful and just thank you for everything you've done. And, you know, the door's always open and was really great. So I always feel, you know, I feel really happy with my...
Mm-hmm, with your experience.
Yeah.
What made you decide that you, like you said, you asked for your release, so obviously
yeah,
your contract wasn't up.
Yeah.
What led you to that decision?
You know, it was a lot of things. I had, you know, especially as a woman there, you kind of feel like you get to a point where you're like, I don't know how much more I'm going to, I could have stayed for a few more years and had different experiences and, you know, had a few more amazing, you know, matches and moments. And I know that would have happened. But it's at the sacrifice of so much of your personal life,
mm-hmm,
you know, and,
mm-hmm,
and Henner, and I were engaged. We got engaged that 2012.
Cause you were with him pretty much the whole time.
The entire
you were in the company,
time,
right?
Henner
yeah,
was with me the entire time. So all five years plus. And so, you know, it got to a point where I'm like, I can't have this, you know, especially as the woman, I can't have a marriage and be a mother someday,
mm-hmm,
and kind of be the house, you know, somebody who cares about my household and takes care of it. And we had just bought a house. We were going to rebuild our house from scratch. And I'm like, I just can't do that and have this.
Right.
And I had, and I had another passion, which was pulling me, which was the Women Empowered program. And I felt like it really needed just a little push behind it. It needed that female energy. It needed somebody who really
needed
cared about it. Yeah.
Because
Henner's got so many other things going on that he cares about it, but it's not like this isn't his baby. And for
mm-hmm,
me, it was meant so much to me that I'm like, this needs my attention and my love and my, you know, I really want to put
some
energy into it.
And it's amazing too. you mentioned it earlier before we got on the air when I said, wow, you look great and you're slim and trim. You're like, I got this thing called sleep.
Yeah. It's amazing.
It's amazing how
sleeping in your own bed.
It's amazing when you get involved in WWE, the hamster wheel that continues and continues and continues. And it's a nonstop flight, security, bags, rent a car, arena, show, drive, flight,
gym.
And it just never ends. And when you get away from that, you're like, oh my gosh, this is so hard outside of the actual matches that you're having.
Yeah. Yeah. Whenever you step away, you go, how the hell did
I
do that?
How did I do this?
How did I do that for 5 years straight? And like nonstop. But you're right. It's just it is the hamster wheel that you don't even know what's going on in the outside world. I felt like when I left, I actually went through kind of like a weird thing. When I left, it was like.
Like a withdrawal?
Well, not even that. No, I was like back in this world where I felt like I was on Mars for 5 years. My friends never called me.
Because they knew you were never around.
Yeah.
Never
so
available.
I never got calls like, hey, come over for a barbecue. Yeah. Or what are you doing today? And I'm like, hey, guys, I'm back. Anybody want to hang out?
It's so funny that you said barbecue because I was thinking the same thing. I got suspended for kicking a flag a few years ago. Yeah. And I was so mad that I was suspended for a month. But it was right over Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
And I had a barbecue. And I was like,
yes.
I'm actually a real person.
On a Monday, right?
Wow, yeah. Yes, like, wow,
Memorial
I can have a barbecue
Day.
Now? That's the big thing is the barbecue,
I'm
right?
not going to lie. This year's Memorial Day was the first time. Because even last year, I think I was traveling on it or something. I was like, Memorial Day is amazing. Like, this is so fun. Like, it's just a Monday that no one works, and we just, you know,
yeah,
we get to just appreciate life and
hang out with our friends.
Hang out and be with family. It was, yeah, it's just the luxuries in life that you don't really get when you're.
So you left, and you have the Gracie Women of Power Self Defense program. We talked about that, but you got some other stuff going on.
Yeah, you know, and I still I love entertainment. I actually love, like I said, when I really started feeling like I was enjoying, you know, my time with WWE was when I was a heel and getting to do more of the acting stuff and
right. Performing.
Right, yeah, performance aspect. So I while I was, you know, so I'm focusing on the academy and teaching and that, but I also last year I did my first film, which was a sweet fight scene.
Nice.
With like, yeah, so it's the next it's the
I had the
next
Scorpion King,
yes.
The Last
That's
Throne.
That's right, the next Scorpion King
right
movie.
Here.
Yes. And so I got to work with the lead actress in that, and we have this, I mean, I'm not going to toot. I don't toot my horn often. But this
but
fight scene. Toot, toot. But this fight scene is amazing.
Nice.
Like, it was so
Did
fun
to do. Did
you
choreograph it? Or?
So, no. We had a fight choreographer. And it was just – it was such a cool – you know, it was just so different. It was the same but different, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I went in with a totally open mind. I wasn't like, oh, I was a wrestler, so I know what to do. Like, I know film fighting is so different. But
right.
But it has some of the same elements. So I felt like
just
I
a
really –
a lot more takes.
Yes, a lot more takes. And but I was like, wait, we don't actually have to hit each other? That's crazy.
Yeah, wow. You're allowed to miss?
Yeah,
and they film it that way?
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
So that was really fun, and that will be coming out this year.
Okay.
End of this year, I think. I don't have a release date yet. But and then actually this summer, I just landed a recurring role in a series called Matador, which is going to be on the new El Rey network.
Nice.
Which is Robert Rodriguez's new network.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a sweet network.
That's
mean,
huge,
for me,
yeah.
I love that stuff. It's like kind of grindhouse. It's got like horror flicks.
Yes.
It's got like kung fu. It's got just
I
like about a
actually,
badass
I think
television.
Wrestling is going to be on.
Yeah,
it.
There's going to be Lucha
thing.
Libre.
Yeah,
yeah. There's going to be – so it's just a cool like network that I was
And
like,
you have a Spanish background.
Yeah, and it's kind of for like these – it's kind of like for like third generation, they call them millennials, like myself, where I have, you know, I have a Latino background, but I speak English.
Mm-hmm.
So you still identify with the culture a little bit, but.
But like
know,
also you said Latino, you said Lucha
Latino,
Libre.
Lucha Libre.
You've got the little accent there. So that's great. So you're a reoccurring role in Matador.
Yeah.
Have you started filming that?
Yeah, we did.
That's
yeah,
awesome.
We have. Yeah.
Congratulations.
So I started filming actually right before for our wedding, and then we've continued. So
that's
we just,
great.
We're about halfway through the season right now. And it's been so
fun. When does that start?
It's actually going to premiere July 15th.
That is amazing.
On
El Rey, which
yes.
is which is starting, I think it's just started now, like a few months ago. Or
yeah,
is it on
yeah,
now?
It's already yeah. it's already on now. They have another series called From Dusk Till
Dawn.
From
Dusk Till Dawn,
yeah,
right. That's
so,
great. Congratulations and all that. I mean, it's always cool when you see someone who leaves the WWE on their own terms and goes on and does basically whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. Last question, what's your favorite match that you had if you had to pick one?
My favorite match, would be Vengeance with against Beth Phoenix, and that was the one
title match.
It was title match. I lost actually.
Okay,
but it was
the best matches you always lose.
Yeah,
always
right. Yeah, and it was actually the one at Madison Square Garden.
Wow,
and It was actually the one where I took the Glam Slam off the top rope.
Nice. And were you the heel or was she?
She was the heel.
Okay.
And I was the face. But it was right after that. I think I made my turn somewhere after that. But it was like, it was just the moment where I felt like everything started to feel like right. And I felt like I was finally kind of earning
mm-hmm.
my place there with the fans. You know what I mean? Right. Because especially as a baby face, they're just like, who is this girl smiling?
And yeah, this and hot girl. You can't take her seriously.
Yeah. And it was the first time I felt like I was kind of coming into my own. And me and Beth just had this like magical, like, you know, experience
chemistry
together.
Was there, yeah.
And we just, you know, we were really proud of ourselves and felt it was just, yeah, it was such a magical
I love it, the
thing.
Glam Slam from the top
glam
rope.
Glam Slam
did you ever
from the
think?
Top rope, I know.
Do you remember when I was thinking about this too, when we went to China and there was that blue like shmoo statue all over the place? I just remember you and me took a picture in front. We're like, this is the dumbest. It's like a blue pile of poop.
What was that guy? Wait, that reminds me of when we went to Japan. This is my favorite Chris Jericho story. When we went to Japan and remember we all went out for that Korean barbecue?
Yes, after the show.
We went out for the Korean barbecue and it was so delicious, and it was the first time I realized like, wow, I really don't speak Japanese. I have no idea what these people are saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you know, Jericho was handling everything. Everybody had a great
time. Yeah,
took
you guys out for
But it was like we had to take an elevator down to get to the main street,
mm-hmm.
and not everybody could fit in the elevator. So we took two elevator rides down. So we were in the first one. It was like you and then like some of us and some of the girls we were all there, and then the second group had to come down, and I remember Ted DiBiase was in the second group. And we get to the bottom, and there is this passed out, drunk Japanese guy on the.
It's
on
a typical Japanese thing where businessmen will get so drunk and just pass out on the street.
Pass out on the street. So this business, you know, Japanese guy just passed out,
wearing
out
a suit,
sleep, wearing a suit, just out.
Mm-hmm.
So Jericho's like, all right, let's mess with DiBiase. And he comes down and Jericho's standing over him and he's like, yeah, that's right. Get back up. You want more of this? You want more? And he's like in his face.
You
like,
see what happens?
You see what happens?
You
mess with me. And I mean, and then we all kind of like play along. I'm like, no, Chris,
don't hit him again.
You know, like girls. And DiBiase comes in. He's like, oh, man, no, no. And he gets all hyped up and he starts grabbing you. And
he ran over and grabbed me and pulled me down the street. He's like, man, you can't be punching me. They're going to throw you in jail, man. They're going to throw you in jail.
They got cameras. They got phones out.
You see what happens? You see what happens, businessman? And then we told him that I did not knock the guy out. He was actually passed out in the street. He got so flipped out. I forgot about that. That's funny.
It's really funny.
Eve, it's great to talk to you. It's great to have you here. And we've had, like I said, we've traveled the world together and we both made it out on the other side.
That's right.
And congratulations. We'll be looking for Matador on El Rey. Scorpion King, The Last Throne is coming out. And the Gracie Women Empowered Self-Defense Program, which is in Torrance.
Yep, it's in Torrance. But you can also look at GracieAcademy.com and GracieUniversity.com for the Women Empowered Online.
It's always nice talking to somebody that you know could kick your ass. That's why I like this table in the middle here. I don't have to worry about it. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks to Eve Torres Gracie for being here today. Thanks to all of you for listening. I know there's hundreds of thousands of podcasts to schwoz from, and I'm always excited to know that you schwoz mine. Hope you enjoyed the new Fozzy song, Do You Want to Start a War? I hope you enjoyed hearing from Snooks, a man on a mission for sure. Also, thank you for using my Amazon link every time you do your online shopping. Really easy to find. Just go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page, then click on Talk is Jericho, and you'll see all three of my Amazon links, Amazon UK, Amazon Canada A, and Amazon, you ready? Everybody's going Amazon, Amazon USA. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. No extra fees or hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done and you're helping me out in the process. We'll see you this week on Saturday night at the Garden, Madison Square Garden, the most famous arena in the world. Next week, I'll tell you how the Madison Square Garden show does. I'm working with Randy Orton. Lots of great memories at MSG. Sunday, I'll be at Wildwood, New Jersey. Monday is Richmond, Virginia for Raw. Tuesday, Fayetteville, North Carolina for SmackDown. And of course, July 24th at the Whiskey A Go-Go Fozzy record release party for Do You Want to Start a War? But on top of that, I'll also be back with you next week with more amazing talk as Jericho's got so many great guests for you to listen to, but it's going to be a surprise as to who it is. Until then, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs. In the meantime and in between time, that's it. Another edition of Talk is Jericho. See you next week. Yeah, boy!
you.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
Five seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay. Judges? That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo!
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Longtime listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to Geico, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Syria Peace Talks? I'm Ben Thomas with an AP News Minute. Syrian rebels have rejected peace talks being proposed by Russia. They're accusing Moscow of failing to pressure its ally, President Bashar Assad, to end the conflict. Christmas may be over, but the shopping isn't. Hazel Ginn was at Macy's Herald Square in New York today.
It's not too bad. Even we went up to the ninth floor, and we managed to get in a queue of about four deep, so not bad. Yeah, and then we went to another one, and it was only a couple, so we kind of timed it well, I think.
America's research group, which focuses on consumer behavior, projects holiday sales up about 5% this year. Harley-Davidson is placing a renewed emphasis on teaching people to ride as part of its efforts to attract more customers. The company is expanding the number of dealerships with a Harley Riding Academy. The move comes as the industry grapples with years of declining sales and an aging customer base. I'm Ben Thomas.